Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Eight American missionaries arrested earlier this month in Haiti for trying to take 33 children out of the earthquake-ravaged country are back in the U.S., but still face possible child kidnapping charges. The group's leader, Laura Silsby, and her former nanny, Teresa Coulter, remain in a Port-au-Prince jail and appeared before a judge yesterday to answer questions about their plans to set up an orphanage in the Dominican Republic and their connection with Jorge Puelo. Mr. Puelo is the man who falsely portrayed himself as the group's lawyer and who is now reportedly wanted in at least four countries in connection with charges of sex trafficking of girls and women. Mr. Puelo has denied the charges, but the case of the 10 missionaries, which has received much attention in the media, now takes a turn to an issue which receives too little: human trafficking. Joining me now to talk about that issue, President Obama's ambassador at large, Luis C. DeBaca, director of the Office to Monitor and Combat Human Trafficking, and Benjamin Skinner, author of the book A Crime So Monstrous, Face to Face with Modern-Day Slavery. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Ambassador, first to you, let's start with the most basic question, and it may seem very obvious, but it's not really. What is human trafficking, and how is it accomplished?
Well, human trafficking is all of the acts that are involved in reducing someone to a form of servitude and then keeping them there. And so a trafficking victim is somebody who is being held in compelled service. Basically, it's what the Constitution of the United States made illegal in 1865 when it ended formal slavery and also prohibited involuntary servitude. So this is not a new concept. This is something that our country has been fighting for a long time around the globe, and it's something that, unfortunately, we see now. Now, it doesn't look like it used to. It's not usually as overt. It's not as legally supported as it was for so long here in the United States, but what we're talking about is modern slavery.
What are the proportions of this problem worldwide? How big a problem are we talking about?
Well, there are a lot of estimations. The lowest end estimation is the International Labor Organization's, which is about 12.3 million people worldwide held in bondage. There are estimates that go up to about 27 million. A lot of that just comes down to methodology. But 12.3 million the year 2010, I think it should shock all of us, because the only thing that's worse than that number is the number of prosecutions that the nations of the world do in any given year, which is holding steady to only at about 3,000.
And what is the role of the State Department and you and your post to serve in monitoring and combating this overwhelming issue of human trafficking?
It's several-fold. Here in the United States, we are the chair of the interagency process, and there are a lot of really engaged actors in whether it's in the U.S. Attorney's offices, the FBI, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Health and Human Services. The 56 states and territories are coming online. New York certainly has been a leader on this with their new state law, new as of a couple of years ago. And so you have state attorneys general and others. We end up having the responsibility to kind of be the traffic director on that, but then also to encourage other countries to have that kind of a system. So we look at all of the countries in the world to see how they're doing on fighting human trafficking and what kind of systems they have in place, what kind of laws they have in place. And then finally, we support governments and non-governmental organizations in order to build capacity and to get programs out in the field that actually then do go out and combat trafficking. So it's a lot of different things going on, and in many ways, the Obama administration is proud to be able to continue the work of the Bush administration and the Clinton administration. This is a bipartisan effort. It's something that we have a lot of consensus and a lot of support from people on both sides of the aisle. And I think that that reflects what this really is, which is something that speaks to who we are as a country.
Ben Skinner, your book, A Crime So Monstrous, Face to Face with Modern-Day Slavery, makes such a compelling case. But in your experience, what is our consciousness level with this international crime?
It's very, very dim. We as Americans think of slavery either as a relic consigned to sepia-toned photographs of the 19th century, or we consider it a metaphor for undue hardship. If you look up in the dictionary what the definition of slavery, the first definition is drudgery or toil in Merriam-Webster. That's not what we're talking about. As Ambassador DeBacca alluded to, what we're talking about are people who are forced to work, held through fraud under threat of violence for no pay beyond subsistence. And as he said, the numbers, no, these are populations that don't stand in line, raise their hand, and wait for the census to be taken. But the numbers that we do know about indicate that there are more slaves today than at any point in human history.
And tell us about this practice of traveling across international borders for purposes, what we now speak of as human trafficking, for purposes of servitude.
Sure. According to the State Department estimates, and Ambassador DeBacca can update this if there's a new State Department estimate, but the State Department has hitherto put forward numbers that there are around 600,000 to 800,000 that are trafficked across international borders each and every year. Into the United States, the Justice Department estimate is that there's between 14,000 and 17,000 that are trafficked into this country each and every year. Put another way, if we're talking for half an hour, on average, one more person would be trafficked into slavery on U.S. soil.
And Ben, how are these children and women lured into such a position? How did the traffickers find them?
Well, take the case that you mentioned, the Pueyo case. From what we can tell from the Interpol reports that I've seen, from the news reports that I've seen, it was a very classic situation of Pueyo's associates, recruiters, recruiting a number of Nicaraguan girls. Three of them wound up escaping, which is how we know their stories. But they approached people in a community that they knew were extraordinarily vulnerable, were suffering from withering poverty, and said, you know, come with us, we'll get you a job across the border. Once those girls were taken across the border, their papers were taken away, they were photographed naked, and escaped 10 days later, which is, again, how we know their stories. This is, again, the Pueyo case. For every three that escape, there are thousands, if not millions, that don't.
Now, I think one of the things that we also
please.
Have to think about is that while that is certainly... That situation, I think, is what many people think of when they think about human trafficking, is this notion of, usually when people think about it, they think about sex, they think about young girls being lured to another country. But the reality, the larger numbers are people who are enslaved in their own countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the things that we see in the Haiti situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily just the notion of Haitians or Dominicans taking from the island of Hispaniola to other places. In fact, that's a small percentage compared to all of the people who are actually in bondage there on the island. And I think one of our concerns is that when people see the movies or they, hear the kind of public face of this, that they not get so concerned with the international travel aspect as opposed to the human rights violation of the people who are being held in servitude.
And Ambassador, it's not just about sex traffic. It is also about servitude for other purposes, correct?
It is. And, it's interesting because I think one of the things that I've seen in my years as a prosecutor before I ended up with this appointment was that the number one predictor of whether somebody was going to be held in sex slavery was not whether or not they were being held as a prostitute. It's whether or not they're a woman. Most women who are in a slavery-like situation, whether it's as a domestic servant, in a factory, or in the sex trade, are in constant risk of being sexually abused. And so I think that one of the things that we're trying to look at is to look at the whole woman, to look at the whole victim. How can we take care of people, whether they're working in an egg ranch, working in a sweatshop, or find themselves trapped in prostitution.
Ambassador, in your experience as a prosecutor or in this current role, What is the connection, if any, between human trafficking and other international criminal activity, say drug traffic, counterfeiting, etc.? Is there a link at all, a correlation?
Well, there's a number of folks who've looked at it that say there is. I think we're continuing to try to work both with researchers and then also some things that probably won't be as releasable with the intelligence community to try to see just how what the depths are of those links. I think one of the things we've certainly seen is that the traffickers and the victims of traffickers tend to travel in many of the same pathways as the other folks who are in dealing with illicit trade. So especially in the alien smuggling context, we see people who are using those established contraband routes to move people in who they subsequently enslave.
Ben Skinner, I wonder why we are not, Americans in particular, but even the world community, more attuned to this crime so monstrous. We hear about the illegal drug trade all the time, especially in terms of international crime. On the domestic front, we certainly hear about child pornography. We have a near-national obsession with child predators on the home front. Why are we not paying more attention to this? Where's the outrage, in your view?
You know, I think so much of this is because, unfortunately, it's oftentimes the worst people that come up with the best quotes. But Joseph Stalin was supposed to have said that the death of a million men is a statistic, the death of one man is a tragedy. And people don't understand the tragedy and the hope of the tragedy of one slave's life and the hope of one survivor's life. And that's what I set out to write about in the book, is to illustrate that, to put a human face on the statistics. And one reason why I take this so personally, and I know why the ambassador takes it so personally, is because we've met survivors, because we've seen the hope and the potential for them to rebuild their own lives. And I'm keenly aware. I saw Ambassador DeBaca actually on his first foreign visit as the official representative of the government on this issue in South Africa this summer. The day after I saw him, I was in a hospice, and this was a state-run hospice. It was a few blocks from the World Cup stadium, and there was a 17-year-old girl who had been sold a year earlier into a Nigerian human trafficking syndicate. And I was on assignment for Time magazine writing about these syndicates operating in the immediate vicinity of the World Cup stadiums. This girl had full-blown AIDS. She had tuberculosis. And we found out the next day that she was 3 months pregnant. She can no longer speak for herself. She died very sadly a week after I spoke with her. And so it falls to all of us to remember her and to acknowledge that there are millions of others who like her were enslaved, and who, if they die in slavery, then that is an indictment of all of us.
And Ambassador, that brings me to my last question for you, which is precisely that, what the world community can and should do. Yesterday in Boston, I know you gave a speech on the fight to abolish modern slavery, and you began by noting that it has now been 10 years since the passage of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. How far have we come, and how far do we have to go?
Well, I think we've come pretty far. Now we have, in the United States, we have systems for helping people stay in the United States as opposed to getting deported. As happens in many countries, even if somebody's been enslaved, in many places around the world, we see people being jailed or deported rather than being taken care of. And the United States is a leader in the victim protection field, and we're going to work with our counterparts overseas to try to make sure that a victim who is liberated in another country gets the same type of treatment that they would get if they were here. But I think that a lot of it ends up being just that notion of the comfort zone. When I prosecuted the case a little more than 10 years ago in New York of the deaf Mexicans who'd been forced to beg in the subways, I didn't meet anyone in New York over that year and a half that I was there who had not seen them. Everyone had seen them walking through the subways begging, and no one had known that they were enslaved. And so there was a bit of kind of collective guilt that New Yorkers had not helped rescue them during that time period. And I think that that's the kind of thing that can actually drive us forward. We can look at the world and we can say, who are the slaves out there? What are they doing? And how can I personally stop slavery, whether it's in my choices as far as the clothing that I buy, the chocolate that I eat, or how I view minorities, women, people who are on the margins of society. And I think that that's where we are as far as the big difference between now and 10 years ago is that people are starting to ask those questions. People in New York are starting to say, you know, what's going on with the domestic servants? What's going on with those girls out on the street who we've often just thought of as prostitutes? Instead, we need to start thinking, what are their lives like and what can I do to stop it?
Gentlemen, thank you both so much for your time and attention to this issue. Ambassador-at-Large Louis C. DeBacca, who heads the Office to Monitor and Combat Human Trafficking. Ben Skinner is a fellow at the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School. He's also the author of A Crime So Monstrous. I'm Jamie Floyd. I'm in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, graduate school. Should you or shouldn't you?